We want to talk about the physical makeup of a spiritual body. We're talking about the Lord's church, but we realize that the Lord's church is made up of us, physical human beings. And we're different. We have here tonight a week old and a 94-year-old here together at the same time. So that's a pretty big difference. We have men and women. That's a big difference. We have parents and children. It's a big difference. We have people who have jobs that make, you know, working every day. We have other people that are retired or that don't work outside the home. We have some that are on disability. We have some that are in school. We have, you know, there's so many different things about us. We understand that the thing that links us all together is the fact that we're all part of the body of Christ. And I understand, of course, that when we talk about the weak old, those little children that are here aren't Christians yet, but in the general sense, the fact that their parents are here and part of the congregation, you know, they're part of us even though they're not Christians yet. We hope that one day they will be. And we expect that one day they will be. But as we look at a church that is made up of multiple generations of people, we realize that that's going to bring about some differences. That we're going to have to take into account when we're dealing with each other in order to get along with each other. Because we are going to find that we view the world differently. We understand things differently. We have different expectations. You know, there are some who have lived the better part of the years that they're going to live. They hope to still have several more good years, but they know that they're not ever going to be back in that prime of 18 and 19 and 21 and not going to be there again. We have others who are in their teen years and they're looking forward to those prime years yet. Some of them think they're already there, but as they get there, they'll realize, wow, I wasn't as good as I thought I was then. I'm better now. And then they'll know they know it all instead of just thinking they do. But as we look at those differences, we have to realize how important it is for us as a body, as a spiritual body, to work together and to use those differences to our advantage. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse number 2, Paul tells the Ephesians, after having told them in verse 1 that they're to walk worthy of their calling or their vocation that they were called with, he then says, with all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love. Sometimes these kids and these teenagers are going to irritate some of us that are older. Sometimes some of us who are older are going to aggravate some of those that are younger. That's going to happen. But Paul tells the Ephesian church that they need to have meekness and they need to have long suffering. And they need to forbear with one another. They need to put up with the things about others that irritate them. Now, we're not talking here about overlooking sin or turning a blind eye to character flaws that are going to cause serious problems. Things like laziness or disobedience to their parents or things like that. Well, I'm not talking about that. But what we do have to understand is, well, they're still young. And they've got a long way to go. And they need to understand, and it's probably harder for them, and that's one of the things we need to understand, is that because they're young, they think they know a lot more than they do, and we need to understand that when we were that age, we probably thought that too. But they need to understand that we've been where they are, and hopefully they can listen to some of our wisdom and some of our experience so that they don't make some of the same mistakes that we make. But that means they may have to put up with us giving them some of those lectures that they love so much. I can always tell as soon as we're about 15 seconds into one of those telling these kids how they need to live their lives, their eyes glaze over and they just stare. And I don't know if they hear anything after those first 15 seconds. But they need to learn to put up with that. And we need to learn to put up with their shortcomings because of their youth. To take advantage of the enthusiasm and excitement that they have because of that youth. And realize that, and we talked about Wednesday night, that sometimes the things that seem problematic to some, others would say, well, that's not, why are you worried about that? That's not a big deal. But sometimes those things that don't seem like a big deal to us, they're a pretty big deal to them. I dare say, if one of those puppies that we have over there, I don't know, how old do they have to be before you can quit calling them puppies? But one of those dogs got out of that fence and got out on the road and got hit by a car, it wouldn't hurt me personally. I wouldn't mind. In fact, at times I kind of pray that it would happen. But I know that my children would be torn apart. They'd be torn to pieces. Now imagine, Sister Addie's got a little puppy dog that she just loves to death, and I imagine if her dog got out and one of our dogs got hold of it and chewed on it like a rag toy, because that's how little hers is, I imagine she'd be upset by that, because she loves that little dog. But to somebody else, that might not mean much to them. Well, it's the same way with so many things in our lives. The things that teenagers worry about aren't the same things that young parents worry about. The things that young parents worry about aren't the same things that grandparents worry about. They're certainly not the same thing, you know, the grandparents don't worry about the same thing the grandchildren worry about. We're different. And we're at different stages of life. And because of that, our focus in some ways, our troubles, our problems, our struggles are going to be different. And then when you put into that the fact that the world changes around us and changes with us, it's almost as though the boys planned this today, but they were asking us some questions in the men's class, and they asked me questions during the youth devotional about some things. We said, what are you talking about? And yet, I answered their question, and as I thought about it, I realized that these young people, they're living growing up in a different world than we grew up in. They're going to have to face challenges and face moral dilemmas and ethical dilemmas that we never imagined. And I think about that to help us understand it. I don't imagine that anyone living in the 50s or even the 60s could have imagined the impact that legalized abortion would have on this country. They never imagined. They probably never imagined that it could happen. That abortion, that killing the baby that hadn't been born yet, that could be legal. I can't imagine that could ever happen. But it did happen. And now it's been legal for some nearly 40 years. For all of my life, abortion's been legal. And how has that changed our world? Well, it's changed it a lot. There are some 45 million less Americans than there would have been if abortion hadn't been legal. That's a big difference. And then I think about the fact that 30 years ago, 20 years ago, maybe even 15 years ago, people would have never imagined same-sex marriage, that that could happen, that that could become legal in anywhere in the United States. Much less, I think it's now 6 states where it's legal. That 6 states could say it's legal for a man to marry another man or for a woman to marry another woman. That never would have imagined that. And yet some of these younger kids that are here tonight, I see several out there, they're going to grow up their whole life never knowing of it being having been any other way. And yet the rest of us live most of our lives up to this point without even thinking that it could have happened. But they're never going to be able to remember a time when it wasn't the case. I think about just how different the world is in so many ways. Some good and some bad, I suppose. You know, if I ask what a CD is, of course, things are changing and people's knowledge is changing, but 10 years ago, if I'd asked what a CD was, most of the adults, at least certainly the ones over 40, would have said, well, that's where you take your money down to the bank and they keep it for you and they give you interest on it. And most of those in their 20s and down would have said, well, that's this little round thing that you play music on. Now, I think because the little round things you play music on have been around long enough that a lot of us are more familiar with them now. But still, it's hard for some who never grew up with that and weren't around it to remember what they're called. They said, well, I want one of the little round things. You want a paper, that little round thing, maybe the little round thing. That's how I want it. It's different. And of course, those little round things that we're just now starting to get used to, they're obsolete. They're going to be gone in just a few more years. That have been replaced by digital recordings like MP3 and MP4 and any number of other things, Flash Player and all sorts of things on the internet and things that we don't even know the names of, that we don't understand, we can't figure out. And yet, to these young people, it's second nature to them. It's just so natural that they can hardly imagine what life was like without it. I dare say that, I don't know, Chris, you ever seen an 8-track? Okay, Chris is old enough to have seen an 8-track. I bet nobody younger than Chris knows what an 8-track is. There you go. That was the original CD. You could actually skip to the next track. they've never seen one. And yet, we remember that. Oh, you had to plug the 8-track in and go down the road with that music. But little things like that. They say that over half of the incoming college freshmen this year, that would be those just a little older than Veronica, over half of them have never used a phone with a cord on it. You know, like the one we have out here. Over half of them have never used one of those. They've used cordless phones, and they've had cell phones their whole lives. It's different. They're dealing with things that are different than whatever used to be. 30 years ago, if somebody wanted pornography, it was either on the back shelf of a convenience store in a brown paper-covered bag, a magazine, or else it was on the seedy side of the bigger cities. They had a club or an arcade or theater where they had the X-rated stuff, and people had to go there to get it. Now, a recent study said that 30% of 13 to 15-year-old boys, because of the internet and because of things like iPhone and other phones that have internet access and things, 30% of 13 to 15-year-old boys said they had watched more pornographic videos than they could count. And it's everywhere. And what used to be confined to those seedy little shops on the bad side of town is now on cable television every night. HBO, Showtime, Cinemax. It's there all the time. The kinds of things that used to be X-rated barely get an R rating now. That's how far our society's come in that area. Yeah, and we've got to understand, and I know it's hard for the younger people to understand, that the older folks don't understand what that's like because they didn't have to deal with that. And it's harder for the older folks to understand what the younger folks are going through because they never had to deal with that. And that's why what Paul says to the Ephesians, bearing, forbearing one another. We've got to do that. We've got to be patient and long-suffering and understand that a lot of these differences and understand how much we need to up because they have all these challenges, even though we don't fully understand them all. But we need to be there for them. When they do have a question, when they do have a problem, when they need to talk to somebody, we want it to be us that they come to talk to and not their buddies at school or some older teenagers or an uncle or an aunt or a cousin out in the world that they're going to talk to about these things. We want them to come to us. We want them to feel comfortable coming to us. But more importantly, we're going to have to study up because we're going to be faced with some challenging things that we've never even considered how to answer or how to deal with because we've never had to deal with them. One of the things that we need to keep in mind is in Ephesians 5 and verse 11. Because at any time of dealing with a moral quandary or an ethical dilemma, of course, the Word of God is the ultimate guide. Always tell us what is right and what is wrong. It doesn't matter what the Supreme Court of the United States says. It doesn't matter what law Congress passes. It doesn't matter what the state that we live in decides is legal or not legal. I know our state's been back and forth on this gambling thing for the past 15 years at least, and is it legal and illegal, and trying to shut this down and trying to get more going and trying to get a lottery and trying, no, we don't need the lottery, back and forth. It doesn't matter what our state decides on that issue. God has already spoken on moral issues of what's right and wrong. So Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 11. Well, let's go back to verse number 7. Be not ye therefore partakers with them, for ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is the acceptable, what is acceptable unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light, for whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Now, I want us to notice two things here that really jump out. Number, verse 12, first of all, says that it's a shame to speak of those things done by them in darkness. And so some people take that verse and they say, well, see there, we shouldn't ever talk about homosexuality. We shouldn't ever even speak of deviant sexual behavior or pornography or drug addiction or alcoholism. We shouldn't talk about those things. But wait a minute. Look at what verses 11 and 13 say. Verse 11 says that we're not to have fellowship with those unfruitful works of darkness, but we are to reprove them. We are to expose them, to condemn them, to correct them. How can we do that if we don't ever speak of them? This idea that we can somehow shut ourselves off in a little shell and protect ourselves from the world doesn't work. We live in this world. We're not to be of this world, but we have to live in this world. And the Bible tells us we're supposed to be the light of this world and the salt of the earth. But we can't do that if we keep ourselves to ourselves. We've got to be out there confronting the evil and pointing it out and exposing it. Notice what verse 13 says. All things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. So when we shine the light in the darkness, whatever's being done in the darkness is going to be seen. There are a lot of things being done in darkness in our country today. All over it. And we don't need to think that somehow because, well, we're down here in the rural Choctaw County and it's not bad like some of the other places. The same things that are going on in those other places are going on here. We can close our eyes to it and pretend that it's not happening, but that doesn't change the fact that it's out there. What Paul says we need to do is to reprove it. We need to correct it. We need to shine the light of truth to show what is right and what is wrong. So there aren't these moral and ethical quandaries, but that there is clear right and wrong. And we need to do that for our young people. They're going to face some things that we never imagined. I think about some of the things that medical technology has brought. I mean, some amazing things. I mean, the amount of people who are cured of cancer and get to live long, healthy lives afterwards, it's amazing that that's been able to happen. But then I also think about other things that medical science has accomplished. The fact that now they can take the sperm from a man and combine it with the egg of a woman and form a tiny start to life in a test tube, in a petri dish, and then implant that in some other woman that's not, that the egg didn't come from, and that's not married to the man the sperm came from, and where do we stand ethically on something like that? Where do we go? No. The fact that they can take someone and alter them so much so that you don't know whether that's a man or a woman anymore, or which one it used to be, or which one it is now. And that these things are allowed to go on, of course, always under the banner of, well, it's freedom! Freedom! But we get to do all of these perverse things because of freedom. All of those things are becoming more and more common. The thought. Can you imagine? Can you remember? Those of you who were alive in the 60s, I don't know if you can remember. What, because it, things have changed so much, it's hard to remember back how things used to be. But can you imagine the thought that on television there would be a couple of the same sex kissing each other on network television? That would happen? Not just once, but regularly now. I mean, it wasn't really, I mean, I don't have to go back to the 60s. In the 80s, people wouldn't have imagined that. And yet now it's so commonplace, we're bombarded by it. It's just in your face. Look, this is just another way to live. We live this way, and we don't have to live like you say. We don't have to have a man and a woman. We can be together, and they're trying to cram it down our throats. But for these young people, they can't remember a time when that was an unusual, that was so unusual, a thing on television. Chances are that almost, well, I know over half, and almost all, I'll say well over half, probably 3 out of 4 if I had to take a guess, of the shows that teenagers watch now have at least one homosexual character on the show. As a regular member of the cast that's in every show, or just about every show. They don't think anything of it. It's not unusual to them. And yet, I don't know how many of you remember the first time that occurred and what an uproar it was on Soap, Billy Crystal, first homosexual character on television. And it was there for comic relief, made everybody laugh because he was so goofy and silly. See, that's the way the devil works. He takes his sinful works of darkness and he first gets people to laugh at them. And once he gets people to laugh at those sinful things and think that they're funny, you see, that's where nudity first entered into the mainstream movie industry, too. It was in the comedy. It was comedic. It was the girl that runs by and gets her top torn off and she's, oh, I'm sorry, I'm naked. And it was funny and everybody laughed at it. That's the way the devil works. He gets us to laugh at sin first. And the more we laugh at it, the less uncomfortable with sin we become. And the less uncomfortable with sin we are, then the more accepting of it we are. That's the way he works. Paul has the solution for that. Don't have fellowship with those unfruitful works of darkness, but reprove them. as the old saying goes, call a spade a spade. When you see sin, call it sin. It's not entertainment. Songs that are full of cursing and derogatory language are not entertaining. They're sinful. Television shows or movies or magazines or books or anything else that's full of sinful things, whatever it is, whether it's drugs, alcohol, prostitution, nudity, gang violence, whatever it is that's in those things, that's not entertaining. It's sinful. And we need to recognize it as that. Or else we'll fall into the trap of those in Romans chapter 1. Do you remember that long treatise that Paul gave on how corrupt that world was? Things haven't changed a whole lot, it doesn't seem like. They didn't glorify God. They refused to hold God in the knowledge. So God gave them up to all kinds of horrible things. And in there, he lists some homosexuality and some other things. He talks about the fornication and the covetousness and the deceit and the envy and the hatefulness and the pride and the fact that they were inventors of evil things. That they broke covenants. That they were unmerciful. They were disobedient to their parents. All kinds of things that he says there. And we hadn't listed all of them. But all those things that he says. And then he says at the very end of that chapter in verse 32, who knowing the judgment of God that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. If we know that adultery is a sin that will cost somebody their soul, but then we read books or watch television shows that celebrate fidelity and adultery, and we enjoy that, and we have pleasure in watching that, we've become exactly what this verse describes. Oh, maybe we're not doing those things, but we are having pleasure in those that do them. And when we read Romans chapter 1, we're reading about a depraved people that we would never consider saying, well, this is a description of children of God. Then we ought not be a part of that. You see, whether we're 10 or 110, there are some timeless truths and principles in God's Word that do not change. We've got to be careful, especially those of us of older generations, because we have certain expectations that are cultural. And we need to be careful that we don't confuse those cultural things with Christian things. We need to be sure that, how somebody fixes their hair